Tommy McNeil, BOA News.
Good morning, Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Barty, Washington. Today is Tuesday, August 8th, and here are some of the stories we are covering. West African leaders will meet on Thursday as Niger's junta rallies support from its military-backed neighbors and its population.
The junta called for a mobilization, especially of young people, to defend the homeland. And many young people said that they were ready to take on the task.
Meanwhile, lawmakers from Nigeria's region bordering Niger expressed concern about the impact of any military action. Resident doctors in Nigeria will protest tomorrow, Wednesday, for better working conditions. Senegal's leading opposition politician remains hospitalized. South Sudan President Salva Kiir has met with Ethiopian Prime Minister Abiy to discuss peace in Sudan.
The two leaders say they should both cooperate seriously to support peace processes in the Sudan. That will help the IGAD initiative on Sudan to be more effective.
And suicide cases continue to rise in Malawi. Those stories and more are coming up on Daybreak Africa. Leaders of the Economic Community of West African States, ECOWAS, will meet this Thursday to discuss the military crisis in Niger. This comes after Niger's new military leaders rejected an ECOWAS ultimatum to return ousted President Mohamed Bazoum to power by this past Sunday. The U.S. has frozen all assistance to the Niger government for the time being, but the State Department says the U.S. remains in touch with President Bazoum. Meanwhile, officials from Mali and Burkina Faso visited Niamey on Monday. VOA's French to Africa reporter Abdul Razak in Niamey tells me the visiting officials reaffirmed their support for Niger's new leaders and vowed to share their air and land resources to defend against any intervention by ECOWAS.
James, good morning. And let's say that according to the Malian Minister of Territorial Administration, who spoke on behalf of the two delegations at the end of a meeting with the head of the Nigerian military, the visit was intended to reaffirm the strong solidarity of these two countries in Niger, the refusal to carry out the sanctions taken against the people of Niger by ECOWAS, and finally to reiterate the active, effective, and full participation of Mali and Burkina Faso in self-defense operations in the event of aggression by ECOWAS against Niger.
I wonder what's the mood in the capital, Niamey, where you are, about the threat of ECOWAS military intervention?
Well, James, so the mood about this threat of a military intervention is, let's say, rather positive among many citizens. And as you know, yesterday, faced with this threat, the junta called for a mobilization, especially of young people, to defend the homeland. And many young people with whom we exchanged said that they were ready, really ready, and willing to take on the task, because they believe that it is a war that ECOWAS wants to wage against Niger, and that in such circumstances, every citizen must consider himself as a soldier to defend the country. To this end, you have a civil society organization that set up so-called patriotic watch committees, which are in fact groups of young people at roundabouts and other key places in the capital, Niamey, to monitor and denounce any suspicious movement or people.
Thank you so much again, Abdul. It's very nice to talk with you. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much too, James, and take care.
Viewers, French to Africa reporter Abdul Razak was speaking with us from the Niger capital, Niamey. Tensions are mounting in Niger and its neighboring nations after a deadline passed on Sunday for coup leaders in Niamey to restore the democratically elected president to power or face possible military intervention by forces from the Regional Economic Community of West African States, ECOWAS. In Nigeria, lawmakers from the border region warned that any military action could be catastrophic for Nigerians living and doing business in the area.
When the West African Regional Bloc, ECOWAS, announced border closures with Niger on July 31st, Nigerian truck driver Buwa Muhammad did not expect immediate repercussions. For more than 10 years, he had been shuttling goods and passengers from Nigeria's Jigawa state to Niger. Jigawa shares a border with the Zinder region in the Republic of Niger, but now Muhammad says his business has come to a halt and it's impacting his family. He spoke to VOA via phone. He says, "I'm just idle, doing nothing, and I have family, siblings, and four children." He says, "We're not finding things easy. I'm begging the government to open the borders." Soldiers of Niger's Presidential Guard overthrew President Mohamed Bazoum on July 26th and have held him hostage in defiance of calls from ECOWAS and Western allies for him to be released and restored to power. In addition to closing land borders, ECOWAS has declared a no-fly zone over Niger and announced the seizure of public assets in member states. The regional bloc had issued a 7-day notice for the military leaders to restore democratic order and threatened to unleash regional security forces on Niger if they failed to respond. The deadline passed Sunday and anxiety is rising over the uncertainty of the situation. Like Buwa Muhammad, Hassan Muhammad, a phone trader, worries that a military invasion would make matters worse. He says, "I'm not happy with that because we trade. They come to do business here and we also do business in their market. But this has all stopped." He says, "Things are even worse for the past 2 weeks. Even eating has become a problem," he says. "We're begging the government to resolve this issue. We pray for God to intervene." Over the weekend, Nigerian lawmakers from the border states warned against a military invasion of Niger, saying it will have serious consequences. Nigerian economist Emeka Okengwu agrees.
It does not necessarily need to be, through coercion or by military, aggression. Niger is a major trade route, all the Fasara trade routes. There are a lot of the animals slaughtered, during our festivities actually come from that route. And also considering that a lot of foodstuffs too, especially the cowpea, also comes from around that area. It is also one of our fastest routes, to the sea. The impacts on the economy will be very bad.
In 2021, trade between Nigeria and Niger reached $180 million, according to the Observatory of Economic Complexity, an online data analysis group. As of Monday, the sanctions remained in place and the next course of action by ECOWAS remained unclear. On Sunday, Nigerian President and ECOWAS Chair Bola Tinubu met with governors of Sokoto, Kebbi, Yobe, Borno and Jigawa as part of consultations on the matter. Timothy Obiezu for VOA News, Abuja, Nigeria.
Voters in the Central African Republic have overwhelmingly approved the draft constitution that paves the way for Faustin Akanji Touadéra to seek a third term as president. The national election body said on Monday, Touadéra's rival says he wants to remain president for life under the increasingly visible protection of private Russian mercenary group Wagner, which first deployed to the Central African Republic in 2018. The new constitution would extend the presidential mandate from 5 to 7 years and abolish the two-term limit. You are listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm James Butte in Washington. Today is Tuesday, August 8th. For more Africa news and features, visit our website at voaafrica.com. Connect with us on all social media platforms. We are on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. South Sudan's President Salva Kiir Mayardit has met with Ethiopian Prime Minister Abiy Ahmed to discuss bilateral cooperation and mediation efforts to end the ongoing bloodshed in neighboring Sudan. South Sudan's Minister of Presidential Affairs, Barnaba Mariah Benjamin, told viewers Nabil Biajo that the one-day visit was initiated by Prime Minister Abiy with the ongoing Sudan conflict and its regional consequences as the focus.
The two leaders met over lunch and they discussed first how to promote peace in the region, particularly in the Sudan, that is one, and two, also with regards to cooperation between the two countries, Ethiopia and South Sudan, in all areas that target their economy, their stability, and equally the infrastructure in the area. On the economic front, they discussed the issue of a Pagak road built from the Ethiopian border towards the oil fields. This is to enhance and open up a new road that can connect South Sudan through Ethiopia to Port of Djibouti. The Ethiopian's Prime Minister informed President Salva that design was going on and it will soon be started. On the issues related to peace in the Sudan, they say they should both cooperate seriously to support peace processes in the Sudan. That will help the IGAD initiative on Sudan to be more effective by having a strong cooperation in order the IGAD quartet that is responsible to mediate in the peace process in Sudan becomes more meaningful and more strength.
Yes, President Kiir is of course part of a four-person delegation named by IGAD to try to mediate and broker peace in Sudan. Tell me about what he's doing in that regard, because the bloodshed is still going on.
Through our strong bilateral relations between South Sudan and Sudan, of course, President Salva is encouraging the two adversaries, that is the SRF as well as the Sudan government, to take seriously in bringing peace to the people of Sudan by cooperating with the mediating processes of IGAD, led by President Ruto of the Republic of Kenya. Because, as you know, President Salva has more influence in terms and also knowledge with regard with the Sudan and the fact that he has got strong sort of personal knowledge, friendship of the two, I'm sure he could have a more effective persuasion process that can help IGAD process to go ahead.
Yes, many people agree on the influence and the close knowledge President Salva Kiir has of the warring factions in Sudan. And as such, people have been expecting him to be more present, to do more, you know, to have more effect in stopping the bloodshed.
Yes, indeed, he's doing a lot, he's doing more. Of course, he didn't attend the quartet in Ethiopia. It was not because he didn't want to attend. That coincided with our Independence Day, that is of the 9th of July. So it was not possible for him to attend, but he sent a senior advisor. But that did not reduce his effort in trying to push Khartoum leaders who are now fighting to make sure that the destruction does not serve the interests of the people of Sudan, nor the interests of the people of the region as a whole, including the Republic of South Sudan.
That's Barnaba Mariah Benjamin, South Sudan's Minister of Presidential Affairs. He was speaking with viewers Nabil Biajo from Juba. Resident doctors in Nigeria are planning daily protests Wednesday at several government institutions, including the Ministry of Health. The group says the move is necessary to press home its demands for better working conditions and government's failure to negotiate salary increases and the payment of arrears. But some Nigerians are calling on the striking doctors to give the new government time to meet their demands. VOA's Peter Clotty reached Dr. Innocent Oji, the president of the Nigerian Association of Resident Doctors.
So this strike has been on for over a week now, with government not doing anything to resolve the issues that we raised. And so we have gotten information that instead of the government trying to address the challenges, especially the very urgent ones, they are going ahead to issue directives to the chief medical director to begin to victimize our members who have joined the strike. And so our National Executive Council met today and decided to escalate by starting a nationwide mass protest from Wednesday, 9th of August, 2023. We are planning to picket the Federal Ministry of Health, the Office of the Head of Civil Service of the Federation, and all the tertiary health institutions nationwide, both federal and state.
Some people are saying whether this round of protest and the threat to embark on a daily protest, whether it's necessary. They said, why don't you have patience for the government to resolve your concerns?
And that is the point. They are not telling us how long we are supposed to wait. Patience to wait. You recall that this has been their language and their message for years now. And so our members are asking, are we waiting till when? Mind you, even the promise they made some time ago, which they signed the agreement with us, that on or before 5th of June, they will release a circular or a policy that will enable the chief medical directors to recruit doctors and nurses to replace those who have left the system. The document is there. I can send it to you. It was clearly written. This circular will be released before 5th of June. We are now in August, 2 months after it hasn't been released. And so when people say we should have patience, patience till when?
Do you think the decision made by the leadership of the Resident Doctors of Nigeria would have any significant impact to pressure the government enough to act?
It depends on the government. We are just agitating, and this agitation will continue. I'm sure they possibly thought that it is only an indefinite strike action that we can do. No, we have all the options on the table because these issues have become systemic and we cannot continue to stay like this. Something that is already leading to death of our members cannot be allowed to continue. And make no mistake about it, our members are resolute and they are willing to stay on until government does this thing, which essentially is a simple thing to do. But we are simply worried. We don't know why they haven't done that up till now.
So what happens if the government decides that those who are picketing will not be paid?
Nigeria is not a banana republic. We are governed by law. So if they're going to do that, they will have to provide the law that will guide whatever they want to do.
Dr. Innocent Orji is the president of the Nigerian Association of Resident Doctors. He was speaking with viewers Peter Clotty. Senegal's opposition leader Ousmane Sonko remained hospitalized on Monday. He had been on a hunger strike to protest what he calls politically motivated charges against him. Nafisa Dia is a member of Sonko's Africa Patriots of Senegal for Work, Ethics and Fraternity Pastel Party. She tells me the government is responsible for Sonko's life.
Presently, he is in the principal hospital. That's the name of the hospital, principal hospital in Senegal. He has been brought there yesterday because they were worrying about his health. Today is his 9th day on hunger strike. And you know how hunger strike is. Rapidly, your health declines. So that's why they brought him there to be sure that he stays in good health. That's what we were told. Not everybody could see him. Maybe I think his lawyer, his doctor. But presently, he's in the hands of the government. So there is not much we can say about his health other than it's worrisome.
Over the weekend, I thought the authorities said that two other opposition members who had been convicted were now free to run for president. How come Ousmane Sonko cannot run?
Well, this is the deal. You know, there was what they called a national dialogue in Senegal, but it was a national dialogue. What happened is those two people, they were convicted and they lost their civil rights. They couldn't run for presidential election. That's why those two people couldn't run for the last presidential election. So they were held in 2019 because they were convicted for, you know, financial crimes. So that means that not only did they lose their civil rights, but they kind of owe money to Senegal. But Macky Sall, on a speed mode, just as he's used to, you know, in our parliament, you have several parliamental groups, one for the opposition and one for the presidential party. And none of them had the majority. So what Macky Sall did was that he proposed them to make their candidates become again eligible by a new law that will grant them a sort of amnesty, then forgive them and allow them to be able again to run. And he asked them, if you accept to vote that law, then Khalifa Sall and Karim Watt will become eligible again. and that's what they accepted. Because what one of them say is that, provided that I can run, I will sign everything.
Nafisa Dia is the member of Usman Sonko's Pastel Party. She was speaking with me from Moncton, Canada. The number of suicide cases continue to rise in Malawi, with figures showing the rate at 11.6 per 100,000 people, higher than the global average of 10.5 per 100,000. Mental health experts say that, among other things, a shortage of public mental hospitals and mental health workers are contributing factors to the problem.
Police records show that for the past 5 years, suicide cases in Malawi have jumped from 128 in 2018 to 292 last year. Police statistics given to VOA shows that the current suicide rate is at 11.6 per 100,000 people, higher than the global average of 10.5 per 100,000. Peter Galaya is the spokesperson for the Malawi Police Service. He says the records show that more youths are committing suicide than older persons.
And what topped the list are issues to do with disagreements in relationships, such as marital problems. Even for young girls, women who killed themselves, sometimes most of the reasons were that of relationship issues. For example, failing to take it that, for example, a relationship has ended.
However, Galaya says other people have killed themselves because of economic problems. Mental health expert Charles Masulani says another contributing factor might be unrealistic parental expectations or negative parenting.
There are a lot of parents that psychologically stress their children, but also serious expectation. The child might be doing well at school, but is not performing well. And the child to run away from those problems might result also to commit suicide.
A shortage of public mental health care is seen as a contributing factor to the problem. Malawi, one of the poorest countries in Africa, has only one public mental hospital, Zomba Mental Hospital, and a few privately owned mental health facilities.
While facilities are few, our mental health seeking behaviors in Malawi are quite low because mental health is stigmatized. So if, let's say, you are stressed up, for you to go to a psychiatric hospital, you fear that people say, oh, he's mad. And the problem is quite huge, especially among men.
Harika Weah is a clinical officer with the Zomba Mental Hospital in Zomba District. He says suicide cases are likely underreported.
It is very difficult for us to have the actual prevalence of suicide because of our rules, which take suicide as a crime. So a lot of suicide are happening, but people are not reporting for the fear of being arrested.
The spokesperson for the Ministry of Gender, Community Development and Social Welfare in Malawi, Pauline Kaude, told VOA that rise in suicide cases is concerning. Kaude said the government has developed several strategies to cope with the issue. Lamek Masina for VOA News, Blantyre, Malawi.
And that's it for this Tuesday, August 8th edition of Daybreak Africa. We thank you for spending your morning with us. For more Africa news and features, visit our website at voaafrica.com. Connect with us on all social media platforms. We are on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. We are also on YouTube, where you can watch our TV shows, Africa 54, Straight Talk Africa, and Red Carpet. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa team, I am James Barty in Washington, wishing that you will have an amazing Tuesday.